Welcome to Inflection Point, conversations with women changing the status quo. I'm Lauren Schiller. Today on Inflection Point, Christina Stembel might just upend a few flower carts.
It was kind of like an Oprah aha moment. I was like, this is my aha moment. It's so easy to fix all these problems.
That's today on Inflection Point. I'm Lauren Schiller. The go-to gift for birthdays, Mother's Day, and Valentine's Day is flowers. It's estimated to be between a $6 and $8 billion business. But have you ever stopped to think about where those flowers come from? If you shop natural grocery stores, boutique flower shops, or live in a field of flora, you can find flowers whose origins may be close to home. But for most of us, it's grab and go or go online and get the most beauty for your buck. It turns out that at least 80% of cut flowers sold in the U.S. are shipped from overseas. Our guest today is Christina Stembel, the founder of Farm Girl Flowers. She thinks the flower industry could use a little refresh. Christina, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
So tell us what is different about your approach to flowers.
So our approach is very different. Our model is we don't give options. We do one daily arrangement using 100% American-grown flowers. We wrap them in reused coffee bags. And then in San Francisco, we deliver by bicycle courier. So it's a different approach in not being able to pick which type of flower that you want.
And what's the rationale behind that?
It actually solved a lot of problems that I found. So the biggest issue that I found was waste. You know, the florist that you go to doesn't know what flower you're going to want to buy. So they have to buy lots of different options and then throw out a lot of the options. And so by not offering any option, we reduce our waste by about 40%. We budget 1%. We don't hit 1% even. So we're able to then give consumers a designer quality arrangement at a generic e-commerce price.
I know that you've spent a lot of time diving into the floral industry and figuring out what's wrong with it. So what are some of the other areas that you discovered when you first started the business?
So the big issue that I talked about with waste was one. The second one was imports. In the mid-90s, when a lot of the leading e-commerce companies came on the scene, they changed the sourcing model, just like any other industry, just like textiles and technology and coffee and all of those industries, where all of their sourcing came from South America, or majority of it. So 80% of the flowers, a minimum of 80% of the flowers sold in the United States now are imported, which didn't make sense to me because, you know, living here in sunny California, you see flower farmers when you drive down, you know, Highway 1 and just about anywhere. So what that resulted in was 58% of American flower farmers going out of business in the last 25 years.
And are most of the flowers that are grown in the U.S. from California and the southern states?
Mostly
generally?
California. Okay. About 78% of the flowers grown in the U.S. are grown in California because we have 3 to 4 growing seasons. I'm from Indiana and it gets very cold. So that made a lot of sense to me. There's a lot of growers in Washington, Oregon as well. And Florida and New Jersey have some as well. But those are the main growing states.
Okay, so keep going. Okay. So we have this import problem.
Okay, so the other issue makes me sound a little bit like a snob, and I'm not, I promise, but I am a design snob a little bit, and I didn't like the options that were out there. If I wanted to send flowers to my mom in Indiana, I had to use one of the traditional e-commerce companies, and I just didn't like the options. You know, I would spend an hour sorting through over 100 options on their website, and I would try to find the one that was the most visually appealing. Like, I try to find like an all white bouquet or something. I'm like, how can that be messed up? And what she would receive didn't, number one, it didn't look anything like what I saw online. And number two, it wasn't $100 worth of flowers. And I wanted to send her something better. If I was going to spend $100, I wanted to give her $100 worth of product that looked beautiful and was, you know, it appealed to my demographic and a younger consumer base and just had a higher style element. So to do that, you know, if I was going to send flowers to a friend in New York or LA or somewhere like that, I could easily find a local designer florist. I would have to spend $200 and send them a beautiful bouquet. So there's lots of designer florists out there that do an amazing job. But anywhere else, I had to resort to one of the e-commerce companies. I didn't like what was out there. So the third issue I wanted to fix was I just wanted to be able to send something that I was proud of, and I wasn't proud of any of the options that were currently out there.
So you started the business almost 6 years ago, mm-hmm. On a local basis, right? Delivery on bicycles.
Yes, yes.
And so can anyone anywhere now order flowers from Farm Girl?
Yes, I'm so excited. So when I first started Farm Girl, I thought, just like any entrepreneur, you know, big wide-eyed, you know, thought was, oh, I'll have national shipping going in 12 months. You know, I always build it with the intention to compete with the big guys. And I thought, it's going to take me 12 months. I'll get it going. And then you see why, you know, if it was easy, everyone would be doing it, right? Like, you know, so I figured out, oh, there's a lot of problems here with shipping and trying to get, you know, it to a price point that consumers can afford and things like that. So, and just even shipping flowers is hard. They're a perishable product and you're shipping to states where it's like 110 degrees or, you know, under freezing. So there were a lot of issues that I had to figure out first. So it took me a long time. We just launched national shipping in May. It's growing like gangbusters. I'm very, very excited. It's been wonderful.
May of 2015. So May almost 2015. A year later now.
Yeah. Okay. So it took me from 2010 through 2015 to get it going. But now it is. So like you said, when I first started, it was very micro. I just wanted to test the idea to see if it worked. I started it with my own savings account. So I was like, okay, I'm either going to run out of money or people are going to love it. And thankfully, people have loved it.
So I was doing some research into the flower industry, which is something that I have to say, you're right. I don't really think about it until it's time for me to send someone some flowers. And then I go online and I figure out what my options are. Yeah. But what I discovered is that flowers are actually not considered a high growth industry. And that, in fact, sales have been steady or even declining. So where, as you think about this as a business person, where do you see yourself fitting into that trajectory in the wrong direction?
Yes. So I did a lot of research first and I found the same thing. It's not a high growth industry. There is a lot of opportunity. Basically, three companies make up about 3/4 of the e-commerce space, and it's, you know, $3.5 billion space. So there is a lot of room for disruption in that. And, it, you know, being in the billions, it was a big enough industry for me to be like, you know, let's try this. But it's not, you know, growing at a software type, you know, and it won't. And that's okay. I found a lot of research studies that showed that younger consumers weren't purchasing flowers nearly as much as previous generations have. But all of the reasons that they listed were reasons that my model fixed, the issues that my model fixed. They didn't like the aesthetic. They didn't like that it, you know, everything was imported. They weren't getting marketed in areas that they actually were spending time. We, you know, do most of our marketing on social media channels, which really helps, you know, target the demographic that we're looking for. And I mean, honestly, I didn't buy a lot of flowers before starting Farm Girl because for the reasons that I said, I didn't like the aesthetic. If I was going to spend $100, I didn't think it was a good value for my money, and neither do a lot of other younger consumers. So we're fixing that. You know, a lot of people in our space say that, you know, they're in the thoughtfulness business or it's a thought that counts and things like that. And for me, if I just wanted, you know, to send good thoughts, I would just pick up the phone and say hello, or I would send a Hallmark card, you know, and I could do it for a lot cheaper than $100. So for me, we're not in, you know, the thoughtfulness business. It's great that we get to bring so much joy to people's lives, but we're also providing a really great product for the amount of money they're spending.
I read on your site that you've got this vision of being 100% local by 2020. I feel like so much is going to happen in 2020, by the way.
I know, right? Everybody's using that as the benchmark, right?
You know? It must be because 2020 vision. I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, so what's your why are you so focused on the local aspect?
Yeah, it makes me feel a bit guilty that, you know, I'm putting so much emphasis in using American-grown flowers, and yet all of the vessels, all the vases, things that we use are imported from India and China, and just because there's not a lot of options out there like any other industry. So we've started, we've gotten companies that, you know, used to make drinking glasses out of wine bottles. They're now making vases for us out of wine bottles and things like that. I'm talking to some manufacturers about doing custom lines of vases for us because now we're at the level where I can't order, you know, $50,000 worth of vases at a time where I couldn't before. So if we're creating American agriculture jobs, we should also be focused on creating other types of jobs in America as well. So that's why.
And your growth overall has been good. I mean, it's been great.
It's been
okay.
Great. Yeah.
So what have you learned about creating a successful and sustainable business that you could share with us?
Yeah, I have learned so much in a good way. I often tell people, you know, getting a business school degree is great. I don't have one. But also, you could just take that money. You know, I started it with less than what it would cost to go get an MBA somewhere. And you can learn it firsthand. You learn a lot of things hands-on. And I have learned that it is so hard, that it's the hardest thing you're ever going to do. And that's normal. I feel like we kind of gloss over how hard it is. There were a lot of tears, and I'm a pretty tough girl, but there was a lot of tears. And there will be for anyone, guy or girl. And just that you're going to have to pivot quickly. especially if you're bootstrapped. I kind of fell into that camp that I thought coming, you know, here in Silicon Valley and San Francisco, the first question people ask me is if we're funded or not. And so I really equated a lot of, you know, success equals funding. And now I don't think that at all. I actually give more credit to people that are unfunded and able to make it, make a successful business out of it and build a sustainable company, because it's so much harder when you don't have $5 million sitting in the bank, where it's like, okay, I have this much left after payroll and I need to move this around and I need to, you know, really curb our growth a little bit right here because I need to make sure we have a reserve for this project coming up. You really know your numbers really well. You know what works and doesn't work. If we, you know, have a product that's just not selling, I'm going to know within like a week that it's not selling and I'm going to take it down and change something, because I don't have the luxury of just not knowing my numbers and knowing what's working and not working. So I've learned that, you know, success does not equal funding, and that it's okay and it's really good to pivot and adapt. If something doesn't work, like for instance, right, last year we opened in LA and we closed LA in 1 year. And when I tell people, everyone's like, oh, I'm so sorry. And I'm like, no, this is a good thing. Like I learned so much from that experience and I don't regret it at all. And now I know what direction we're going to go in as a company. And so really pivoting, not being ashamed of that, and just really knowing my numbers.
Well, so, on the funding thing, has this been a choice? Have you been approached or have what has been the situation around that for you, and why have you not gone that route?
I tried to. Last year, I pitched to 26 VC companies or investors, and got pretty far with some of them and got pretty disheartened by the process. I'm trying to build an integrity-driven business. You know, I want to prove that it can be done. You don't have to sell out, as people call it, or do things that aren't within your value system in order to run a business. And, you know, a lot of people will say things to me like, oh, it's just business. And to me, it's like, but what does that mean? Does it mean that you can do things that you shouldn't do because it's under the umbrella of it being business? So when I was pitching to VCs and got pretty far with a few of them, but there were always strings attached with it where, you know, we needed to make all of our team members 1099s instead of W-2. And I'm unwavering on that. I will not do that.
That means full-time employees?
Yes, full-time employees. So our team, we have a few contractors, but they're contractors by choice. We give everybody the opportunity to be full-time with benefits, workers' comp for our bike couriers, everything, because it's the right thing to do. We take care of our team, and they take care of us in return. They're much more loyal to the company. They all care about the product. They care about the delivery, everything like that. So, or there was the strings of you need to offer an import line or switch to imports because they're at least 50% cheaper than using local flowers. I'm unwavering on that at this point. And, you know, there were always strings that I don't agree with, even from, you know, an ethical and integrity standpoint, but also from a business standpoint. I don't think it's the right thing to do for business. So I tried to raise money. I failed at it. I'm okay saying that I failed at things. It's totally fine. It's normal. And now I'm actually really happy that I didn't raise funding. And it's kind of ironic that now a lot of potential investors are coming to us. It's just been phenomenal how many investors have come to us. And I'm just not at the point where I want to bring in investment at this point.
It's kind of like when you're single and you don't necessarily want to date anybody, then suddenly everybody's interested.
When it rains, it pours. Afterwards, yeah, totally. Like, but then if I decide I want to raise capital again, then they'll all be like, scatter.
You know? Where'd everybody
go?
Well, I know that you looked at other businesses before you decided to start Farm Girl Flowers. So will you share with us what some of your earlier ideas were?
Yeah, I was one of those people that drove all of my friends and family nuts with a different business idea every week. And every dinner party with girlfriends would turn into a mini focus group where I would be like, test this for me, or what do you think of this? And when I started Farm Girl, all of them sighed like a universal sigh of relief that, like, finally, she just started one of them, right? So some of the more recent ones were like iron-on pockets for women's suits and things that don't have pockets in them, or a web set of tools for event planners. A lot of people are doing that now, but back then there wasn't anybody doing that. Like, you know, 3D modeling, CAD type drawings for event spaces that could be shared in a social media type network. You know, just ideas like that. I had a million of them. And I really wanted the business that I went with to do something good I would come up with an idea that I thought was, you know, really amazing and could make a lot of money, but I didn't do anything good. It's like, I don't really want to sell toilet paper, you know? Like, there's nothing wrong with selling toilet paper. You can be really, I mean, look at diapers.com, selling diapers. I mean, there's nothing wrong with it. I just wanted to do something that I felt was leaving a positive mark as well. So Farm Girl was definitely the first idea I had that fulfilled both.
Now, with these other ideas that you just mentioned, I mean, if someone hears this and runs with it, should they give you a call or these TMs?
Totally. Well, it's funny. Now I see ones. There was another one that was hilarious. It was called Guy Check. And it was basically an aggregator of information online for online dating, basically, that would tell you if the person's lying or not about things. So, I mean, there were some crazy ones. So, but that one's already been done. And it was like a top app. And I was like, see? I was telling my friends, see?
So okay, so your friends had a sigh of relief. So how did you know that this was the one?
I just had the feeling.
Back to the dating analogy.
Yeah, exactly. I just had a feeling that this one, you know, they say the best ideas are the simplest ones where, I mean, I was looking at this industry and I was like, it was kind of like an Oprah aha moment. I was like, this is my aha moment. It's so easy to fix all these problems by just limiting choice. I kind of looked at In-N-Out Burger and I was like, look, everyone loves In-N-Out Burger because no other companies were really doing the very limited choice back in 2009, 2010. And I was like, and it works so well for them and people love them and they do what they do really well. So it just seems such the perfect marriage of a simple but really, I thought, brilliant idea of a way to fix a bunch of problems and provide a much better, like I wasn't creating a problem to solve the problem. There already was this problem that I wanted to solve. And it was something that I wanted for myself. And I was like, there's a lot of people like me out there. So I did focus groups originally too. And in my focus groups, 86% of people didn't care what the flowers were as long as they were beautiful. And 100% picked the arrangement I made over the ones that I had focused, you know, in the focus group. I had flowers from the other companies. So, and they didn't know which one was which. I did the whole Pepsi Coke thing. But, you know, what people say in a focus group and where they actually put their dollars afterwards are very different. So it still was a huge risk.
Yeah. Well, you had a day job at the time, right, mm-hmm. which you quit to start this business. Tell us what you're doing with that. And then what I really want to know is how did you feel?
Yeah.
Getting ready to say goodbye and then, like, day two.
Yeah. So I did have a day job. I was the director of alumni relations and campaign outreach for Stanford Law School. I was there for a little over 5 years. I was at the university overall for about 7.5 years. And I always knew I wanted to start a business, and I knew it was never going to happen while having a day job. You know, I'd work on this on the side, on the weekends. I would work on, like, business ideas and doing decks of, you know, and financial models and stuff. But I knew as long as I had that safety net and that really steady paycheck, it was never going to put the fire under me to, like, do it. And, you know, it's always a safer thought, being like, oh, I'm going to quit my job and do this. But then once you quit your job, you're like, Oh no paycheck, you know. And I'm kind of a control freak about money anyway. So I like to tell a story of how originally, I mean, I was so scared about running out of money that I switched from coffee to tea because, like, Lipton tea bags I could get for like 16 cents a piece or something versus, you know, coffee at $1 if you know, a cup. And so it started to really sink in that, oh no, I have $49,000 in my bank account, and once I'm out, I'm out. You know, so I better make this work. So it gave me a lot of fire.
So what, like, how did you feel when you were approaching, you know, whoever it was you had to resign to?
Yeah, I think they thought I was crazy. I remember I still talk via Facebook and stuff to one of the law professors that I just loved at Stanford. And I remember telling her and then the head of our board as well that I still talk to, and she buys our flowers all the time. You know, I was like, so I'm quitting and I'm starting a flower company. And just them being like, oh, great. You know, I think that they were like, she's crazy. Like, my former boss, I just got an email from actually, and he's now in a different place as well. And one of his donors, like, sent him I think the Wall Street Journal or New York Times or one of the articles on us. And he sent me a nice note. And it made me, you know, feel a little proud because I swear they probably thought I was nuts. To be like, I'm starting a flower company. You know, I'm quitting my steady job in the economic downturn, you know, in 2010 to start a company that does flowers.
Well, let's go back in time to Indiana,
yes.
Right, where you grew up on a corn and soybean farm there,
yes.
Right? So what was it like for you growing up there?
Very different. We had 2.5 stoplights in our entire town. It was a town of 3,600 people. Very tiny. I was that kid that everybody made fun of in school, too. I was bullied before there was the word bullied. I didn't look like everyone else. I would make a lot of my own clothes and wear my hair all crazy. And I just never fit in there. I never did. Now looking back on it, I really appreciate it because it gave me a lot thicker skin, which you need in business. But from there, I mean, I left as soon as I could. I left the farm 2 weeks after I graduated high school. It was a very different mentality than people, especially in the Bay Area, can understand because it was in 1996 when I graduated high school. And a lot of people didn't go to college. We never even had a conversation, my parents and my sister and I, about going to college. It was just like never, not even in the plan, you know? So I moved to New York City 2 weeks after I graduated high school. I thought I wanted to become an actress, but I think I only thought that because it was the only thing I could think that I could do to get off the farm. And I moved to New York City and realized very quickly that, whoa, this isn't me. I'm not cut out for this. I'm not actually even very good at it. And I don't want to be a waitress when I'm 50 trying to make it and going to auditions where they're basically looking you up and down and giving you a pink or a yellow slip whether you make it through or not. And it just wasn't me, you know. So,
just thinking about your growing up, feeling like you were different from everybody else, did that make you want to be more different or did that make you want to conform somehow?
I always thought I wanted to conform because I really didn't like, nobody likes getting picked on constantly, right? Nobody, I mean, it was a really hard time in my life. I remember a kid in school, I'll always remember this, he was like, well, you're bringing this on yourself because you make yourself look so different than everyone. And, you know, now I think about that a lot because being a female founder of, you know, you would think flowers would be a very female-dominated business. It's not. It's just like everything else, fashion. Like, industries that you think would be very female-dominated aren't. It's still mostly run by men. And flowers are no exception. 100% of all the flower startups that have received funding are all owned by men. And yet 78% of people that buy flowers are women, for women. So I think that standing out like a sore thumb in high school helped me in this position now where it has been difficult. I was very disheartened last year when I was trying to raise capital and couldn't. You know, the things that I would hear from them just didn't make any sense to me. They didn't like my flowers. They didn't, you know, I wasn't doing anything right, it felt like, that they were saying. And yet our, you know, we were growing by 250% year over year every year. You know, we were named the 14th fastest growing private company by the Business Times last year. We're obviously doing something right. And yet I felt like I was being picked on all the time. And so I just kind of go back to the high school days in Indiana and I'm like, oh, I got this. You know, if I could do it when I was 16, I can do it now at 38, you know. So I think it's really helped me a lot.
On your website, you describe yourself as a carbitarian with a slight Samson complex. Could you just explain what that means?
Yeah, we like to do really like fun things on our website with our team. It's really cute. We just had a photo day at work because our team really gets into it. All the new people are like, why am I not up there and stuff? So coming up with trying to come up with something interesting to say about myself. Everyone always asks me like, what do you do for fun? And I'm like, I work 20 hours a day. I don't do a lot for fun, but I'm a vegetarian. And so everyone, when you say vegetarian, they think you're super healthy. I'm obviously not super healthy. I just eat a lot of carbs and cheese. And so that's where the carbitarian came from, because I don't want people, like when vegetarian just, sometimes it can kind of seem condescending, like, oh, I'm a vegetarian. And carbitarian does not sound condescending at all. And then the Samson complex, I have this really just unnatural connection with my hair where I felt like I couldn't cut it forever. I don't know why. I just recently, last week, actually cut off 15 inches from my hair. And it's been really freeing. You know, I used to have nightmares about cutting my hair at night. I don't know why. And yet I saw myself recently in some photos and I look like I'm Amish or something, which there's nothing wrong with being Amish, but I'm not Amish. So, you know, I don't need that anymore. So that's a Samson complex. Like all my power is in my hair. And thankfully, when I cut my hair, my power did not leave. So it's good.
Well done. Did you keep the 15 inches?
No, donated it. So. Yeah.
Not in a braid in a drawer somewhere.
And I stroke it every night. No, I'm joking. No.
You donated it. Okay. Yeah. Well, Christina, what's the best advice that you've ever gotten about standing by your beliefs?
My parents always taught me that the best thing that you could have is integrity. And that it doesn't matter what anyone else thinks if you know that you're doing the right thing. And that's always stuck with me. You know, when I was pretty disheartened last year with the funding thing, and I would, you know, call my parents or talk to my friends, and they'd just be like, it's, you know, you're doing the right thing. You know, if you don't want to make all of your employees 1099s and make them, you know, not give them benefits, you should hold your head up high and just, you know, be proud of that. I can honestly say that everything I do, I try to make the right decision. You know, I weigh out, do we want to use recycled glass vases from Mexico or made in the U.S. non-recycled vases? You know, things like that, which everybody has an opinion on. But I honestly don't have anything that I'm ashamed of that I've done in this business. And that's the way I want to keep it.
Well, Christina, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. This has been a pleasure.
That was Christina Stemble, the founder of Farm Girl Flowers. That's our inflection point for today. Is there a woman changing the status quo you'd like to hear from? Let us know at inflectionpointradio.org. And while you're there, I invite you to become a patron of Inflection Point, like Ginny McReynolds and Jan Sterling, who are helping bring the voices and views of powerful women to the ears of everyone. And you can too at inflectionpointradio.org. Inflection Point is produced at the studios of KALW Radio in San Francisco and delivered to public radio stations nationwide through PRX. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Our engineer and producer is Eric Wayne. I'm your host, Lauren Schiller.